Professor Patricia Balvanera of the National Autonomous University of Mexico, who co-chaired the assessment, says, "There are consequences of not taking other values into account, such as environmental leaders being killed because they had claims to land that have been ignored." Professor Balvanera said, "The evidence shows that if, from the onset, local values are taken into consideration, people will feel part of the project and will be more on board with whatever was agreed. This entails redefining development and good quality of life and recognizing the multiple ways people relate to each other and to the natural world." The assessment was approved by representatives of 139 countries in the city of Bonn, Germany. Professor Unai Pascual from the Basque Center for Climate Change said, "The delegates who endorsed this report say this is a game changer. They realize we've been going through a way of understanding nature in a too narrow sense, and that has brought us to this situation where we live in a planet with interconnected crises. This report is one ingredient out of many which will be needed to convince very powerful stakeholders and decision makers to start changing the way they treat nature." The Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystems Service, or IPBES, which is the equivalent of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, for biodiversity, was set up to provide governments across the world with scientific advice on how to protect nature. Recently, it released another report that found wild species support half of the world's population, but their future use is threatened by over-exploitation. It comes ahead of the Convention on Biological Diversity, or CBD, COP15 in Montreal in Canada in December, which will set the next decade of nature targets, and authors say the findings should provide a valuable contribution to the process. Elizabeth Maruma Marema, Executive Secretary of the Convention on Biological Diversity, or CBD, says, "I applaud the work of all IPBES experts for this and look forward to its active use by all parties and stakeholders to the convention." The relationship between humans and nature is under intense and increasing strain. The report released recently by the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, and akin to the IPCC report on climate change, provides compelling evidence that humans are overexploiting wild species and habitats. Harmful activities, including habitat destruction, poor farming practices and pollution, have altered ecosystems significantly, driving many species past the point of recovery. In Britain alone, of the 8,431 species assessed in the 2019 State of Nature report, 1,188 are threatened with extinction. Globally, there are an estimated 1 million species at risk, with biodiversity declining at a faster rate than at any time in human history. We cannot ignore biodiversity loss. Biodiversity is the variability that exists among all living organisms, between different species, within species, including genetic makeup, and in wider ecosystems. Billions of people rely on wild species for food, clean water, energy, income, and health and well-being. Annually, crops worth up to £480 billion are pollinated by a variety of wild animals, and an estimated 4 billion people depend on natural medicines for their healthcare. These vital ecosystem services are fundamentally based on a healthy environment, and this requires biodiversity. Losing biodiversity leaves species and ecosystems less resilient to challenges, such as invasive species or pests, meaning there is an increased risk of whole populations being wiped out and destabilizing the entire ecological network. Nature is a finite resource, and human self-interest alone should determine that biodiversity must be protected. Alongside overexploitation, humans are driving biodiversity loss by destroying, polluting, and fragmenting habitats across the globe. Many of Britain's most important peatlands, which provide a home for rare species such as the hen harrier, have been drained for agricultural use. The Amazon rainforest in South America is being cleared to such an extent that it may be near a tipping point beyond which it cannot recover.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
President Biden has almost unlimited ways of communicating with the world, but he opted to pen an article posted online Saturday night by the Washington Post to defend his pending West Asia trip in light of the controversies around it. In the piece, he speaks about many issues, including further integrating Israel into the region, Washington's ties with Riyadh, the Saudi-led war in Yemen, the Iran nuclear deal, and more. While most of the matters mentioned in the article are centered around West Asia, they also seem to share another point. The U.S. itself is either complicit in or directly responsible for the very issues it claims that it is trying to solve.
The U.S. Lies through its teeth without stopping a minute. We've seen the debates and discussions about the comprehensive agreement with Iran, which they had promised to renegotiate, and they seem not to be negotiating in good faith. They're trying to paint themselves as innocent, which of course they are not, and they just had a recent rebuff at the G20 meeting in Indonesia, where Mr. Blinken refused to sit down with the leaders of all these states.
Saudi Arabia, infamous for its violations of human rights and under widespread criticism for its bloody war on Yemen as well as the killing of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi, is a focal point of Biden's West Asia tour. But despite this, the U.S. president's framing of the Saudi relationship appeared particularly defensive. During his election campaign, Biden had pledged of making Saudi Arabia a pariah for its crime. But now he has ironically claimed that ties with Riyadh helped promote the U.S.'s foreign policy ambitions. Similar to the other issues, the U.S. president also tried to take fault away from his administration in regard to the Iran nuclear program file by putting the blame on Iran. Biden also stated his readiness to further pressure Tehran despite Tehran's readiness to return to the deal, and this too sheds light on the U.S.'s ironical foreign policy. One of the main purposes of Joe Biden's visit is the sought deepening of Israel's integration in the region and moving forwards with the Abraham Accords, which is the pillar of normalization deals with Israel. But the latter has raised questions regarding Biden's foreign policies, as Israel itself seems to be the source of the problem in the region, from its atrocities against Palestinians to its continuous attacks on Syria and its repeated threats against Iran. In the op-ed piece, President Biden says the U.S. helped end the 2021 war on Gaza, but fails to condemn Israel for its atrocities and violation of Palestinian rights. Biden also proudly mentions the U.S.'s $4 billion support of Israel. But what does all this demonstrate about the U.S.'s stance on Palestinians who have been subject to Israeli brutality for years now?
Well, The issue of the United States and Israel is a burning issue right now, and the U.S. has acted in a hypocritical way where Russia has attacked special military operation in Ukraine to denazify it. And we know what Nazis are. So, and yet, so the U.S. has spent $40 or $60 billion arming these countries, letting all those Ukrainian youth be killed who were forced into fighting Russia. And yet, with respect to Gaza, 8 months earlier, Israel unleashed a horrible attack on Gaza, and the U.S. hummed and hawed, tried to sort of say, maybe we'll calm things down. They didn't spend $40 billion to arm the resistance against Israel. And that is a term which I call tongue-in-cheek. I don't know whether you know the term. It's sort of a sarcastic term, because obviously the U.S. is not going to do that. But it's related to empire.
The U.S.'s one-sided stance on Israel is also clearly demonstrated in the Shirin Abu Akleh case, where it stopped short of reaching a definitive conclusion in her killing by Israeli troops, while all other investigations reached the conclusion that the regime troops did in fact murder her. Now, despite Israeli crimes, Washington seeks not only to integrate the regime further into the region, but also aims to advance its plans to upgrade defense cooperation between Israel and Arabs in the light of the Abraham Accords. And all this raises the question of whether the U.S. truly seeks justice and advocates for human rights, or it only claims to do so in order to move forward with its agenda. After spending his first year and a half in office mostly trying to avoid deeper engagement in West Asia while prioritizing challenges at home and in other parts of the world such as China and Russia, President Biden seems to be making a slight shift towards dedicating more time and attention to West Asia. One of the main purposes of Joe Biden's visit is the so-called deepening of Israel's integration in the region and moving forward with the Abraham Accords, which is the main pillar of normalization deals with Israel. But the latter has raised questions regarding Biden's foreign policies, as Israel itself seems to be the source of the problem in the region, from its atrocities against Palestinians to its continuous attacks on Syria and its repeated threats against Iran.
Well, Israel has been the problem in the Middle East since their inception. And even before that, when they were under British occupation, Palestine was under British occupation, the Zionists were the cause of the problems in the Middle East, going back to the bombing of the King David Hotel. So Israel has been a really terrible neighbor for all of the surrounding countries to them. You mentioned Syria. Yes, I was in Syria several times when Israel was being the aggressor and actively bombing the Syrian people who've done nothing to them. They occupy Syrian territory in the Golan Heights. Israel has been just a terrible neighbor to everyone. They've been abusive of the Palestinian people. I've been to the Palestinian, what they call camps, refugee camps, and these are 70 years old now. These are not new. These are established communities that they refer to as camps. They drove the people off their land. They stole their land that they have no right and no claim to. So yes, Israel is the nexus of the problem in the Middle East.
Now, despite Israeli crimes, Washington seems to not only integrate the regime further into the region, it also aims to advance its plan to upgrade defense cooperation between Israel and the Arabs in the light of the Abraham Accords. Meanwhile, Iran has reiterated that normalization of relations between some Arab countries and Israel encourages and strengthens the regime to continue its crimes. President Ebrahim Raisi in April even compared friendship with Israel to keeping a snake in proximity. Americans have been feeling the economic pressure of inflation in recent months, with surging domestic gasoline prices adding to that burden. There are expectations that President Biden's trip to Saudi Arabia will include a direct request from the kingdom to increase its oil production in the hopes of offsetting the rising costs for American consumers at the pump. During his campaign, Biden had pledged of making Saudi Arabia a pariah. But now, in a move seen by rights advocates as at odds with his promise to put human rights at the heart of U.S. foreign policy, Biden is set to meet with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman as he struggles to combat record-high U.S. gasoline prices.
Biden has done some very foolish economic policies in the U.S. Initially, like day one after his inauguration, he cut off the Keystone Pipeline, and he turned the United States from an oil-exporting country into an oil-importing country. What Biden was not counting on was the rest of the world is sanctioning the U.S. and not wanting to deal in dollars, and they're not wanting to supply the U.S. with commodities and or finished goods. So Biden's economic policies have been an unmitigated failure. And so, yes, Biden is going to Saudi Arabia to beg the Saudis to increase oil production.
Meanwhile, the United States is facing accusations of whitewashing the Israeli killing of Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akleh after concluding the bullet that killed her likely came from Israeli military gunfire, but stopping short of reaching a definitive conclusion in her killing. Abu Akleh was wearing a press uniform while reporting on an Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank when she was fatally shot in the head on May 11th. Since the killing, several media and human rights organizations have all determined that the Israeli military killed Abu Akleh. All this raises the question of whether the U.S. truly seeks justice and advocates for human rights, or it only claims to do so in order to move forward with its agenda.
The United Nations has warned the Israeli regime against forcible mass eviction of over 1,000 Palestinians from their homes in the Masafer Yatta area of the occupied West Bank.
Evictions that lead to displacement, if enforced, amount to forced deportation and a grave breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention, and therefore constitute a war crime.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs added that the international humanitarian law imposes an absolute prohibition on the forcible transfer of civilians from or within the occupied Palestinian territories, and that Israeli authorities must put an end to all coercive measures, including planned evictions, demolitions, and military training in it.
Well, the Palestinians have been periodically rising up against this ongoing slow-motion Zionist genocide. It's been going on now. The Palestinians have been resisting this genocide for more than a century since it began, when these settlers started swarming into Palestine against the wishes of the Palestinian people. And so that struggle will, of course, continue. And there will be continuing protests. There are basically ongoing peaceful protests in Palestine. And every now and then, the uprising becomes more of a military nature. And then, of course, the Zionists respond in kind, and all kinds of blood is shed. At the end of the day, the Zionists are continuing their slow-motion genocide, but it isn't happening fast enough to save them. In the long run, the Zionist entity is doomed because it hasn't been able to get the actual acquiescence of the Palestinians, first and foremost, and then secondarily, the people of the region.
A ruling by the Israeli Supreme Court on May 4th allowed for the mass eviction of Palestinians in the area. The Israeli military has designated part of the area as a closed military zone for training, and the regime has sought to remove the communities on this basis. The European ambassador to the occupied Palestinian territories has warned against Israel's planned evictions.
If mass evictions and forcible transfer were to be the case, that would be the biggest forcible transfer for decades.
The official added that the EU hopes that upcoming visits of US President Joe Biden to Israel would put pressure on Israel to fulfill its obligations to protect civilians.
The US could stop Israel from all of its crimes if it absolutely turned and chose that path, but it won't. And the reason, of course, is that there's a lot of Zionist power here in the United States, including in the Biden administration. And they're sending a message by saying, even when Biden goes to the Middle East, and it would be in his interest and the American interest to have the Israelis modify their behavior, they won't do it. They don't need to do it. They're thumbing their nose at the world. And the Zionists have a long track record of things like this. They never compromise. They never try to go the extra mile to be reasonable.
Although the United States has called on the Israeli regime to stop its settlement drive, but in effect, it has supported the regime in its crimes against Palestinians. U.S. officials have repeatedly hailed Washington's unwavering support for the regime. They have also turned a deaf ear to growing cries from various international organizations regarding the regime's atrocities. The United States has also vetoed numerous resolutions in the UN Security Council that criticize the regime.
Amid ongoing diplomatic efforts to revive the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, the U.S. has introduced fresh sanctions against Iran. Washington claims the measures target an international network of individuals and entities that allegedly facilitated the sale of Iranian petroleum and petrochemical products to East Asia. The move comes ahead of President Biden's visit to the region next week. Last week, Iran held high-stake diplomatic talks in the Qatari capital, Doha, to restore the JCPOA, with the EU coordinator, Enrique Mora, shuttling between Iran's top negotiator, Ali Bagherikani, and Robert Malley, the U.S. special envoy for Iran. Following the talks, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, rejected claims made by U.S. officials about new demands raised by the Iranian delegation in the Doha talks, saying the Islamic Republic's requests are in line with the 2015 accord. He said, contrary to U.S. media claims, Tehran put forward no excessive demands that goes beyond the framework of the JCPOA.
برخلاف برخی ادعاهای رسانه‌ای طرف آمریکایی ما هیچ گونه مطالبه زیاد خواهانه ای نداریم هیچ گونه مطالبه فرابرجامی مورد ادعای آمریکا را نداریم مطالبات ما کاملا در چارچوب توافق سال 2015 است.
امیر عبداللهیان's remarks came in response to US special envoy for Iran Robert Malley, claimed that Tehran came up with new demands at the Doha talks. The U.S. State Department spokesman, Ned Price, echoed Malley's remarks, claiming that Iran has consistently introduced extraneous demands, demands that, or issues that, go beyond the four walls of the JCPOA. Iran is pursuing the JCPOA talks while Israel has been sounding the alarm about Iran, its regional influence, and its alleged efforts of weaponizing its nuclear program.
And Israel is far from wanting the interests of the countries of the region. On the other hand, we see that the countries in the region like Iran, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan, they're talking to each other, they're meeting in Baghdad. They've met several times in Arab and Middle Eastern capitals. So they are capable of sorting out their problems. And therefore, any relationship with Israel would be detrimental and against the interest of the countries of the Middle East.
Meanwhile, a top Iranian security official has warned against forming alliances with Israel, saying that such moves endanger the security of the region. Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, says that any alliance with the Israeli regime, even of a non-security and non-military nature, will pose serious threats to the stability and security of the Middle East region. Shamkhani made the remarks in a meeting with the visiting Qatari Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Foreign Affairs, Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani, in Tehran. He underlined the emphasis on neighboring countries in the Islamic Republic's foreign policy, asserting that Tehran's coherent policy towards its neighbors is to expand all-out and strategic relations on the principle of good neighborliness. Separately, Shamkhani warned that the Islamic Republic opposes any move that changes regional geopolitics. This was in reference to a so-called Arab NATO, a plan that was a non-starter when it was introduced by the former U.S. President Donald Trump. This military regional alliance was due to Israel and the U.S. sounding the alarm over the perceived threat coming from Iran.
The Iranophobia is something very natural to happen in the West because it is one of the U.S. tools against a country like Iran, like Russia, who refused to submit to the U.S. hegemony.
Iran has rejected such a notion and has said that through regional cooperation, security can be established. Iran believes that Israel and the presence of foreign forces are the source of instability.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
ودعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانا. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وأجل فرجه. السلام عليكم and welcome back to our Quranic sessions.
A message from the sky, a mercy for mankind. If you lose your way, we'll always be your guide. Far greater than this world, move mountains with its word. Fixed every part of me and put my heart at ease. And Allah knows words heal the soul. Most beautiful of miracles. The more you read, the more you feel Allah's love with every beat.
So, alhamdulillah, we learned what the rule idgham is and different types of idgham. Idgham with gunna and idgham
without gunna.
Great. And the nasal sound, gunna itself, we will apply now, inshallah, all of them in Surah Al-Ghashiyah. Ready?
Yes.
Go to Surah Al-Ghashiyah.
Yes.
So, respected brothers and sisters who are listening to us, page 592 in my Quran, Surah Al-Ghashiyah, chapter 30 of the Quran Kareem. Okay?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
هل أتاك حديث الغاشية
هل أتاك حديث الغاشية
وجوه يومئذ خاشعة
وجوه يومئذ خاشعة
Great. وجوه There were three steps to go for the Tanwin or Nunisakin rule, yes? The first step was to find Nunisakin or
Tanwin.
Second step, look for the next letter, the Mutaharik letter. The third step,
Apply
one of those four rules. That's easy. So, Fawad Haider, in وجوه يومئذ خاشعة, where is the tanween? First tanween?
On ha.
Hun, right? وجوهن. Great. Now, the first step done. Tanween we found. What is the next letter? Hussain Ruhullah?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Is it one of the Yarmanu letters?
Yes.
Great. So, Hussain Musa?
Yes.
Idgham? Yes.
Yes.
With Ghunna, without Ghunna?
Without Ghunna.
Without Ghunna, because it's the letter Ra, Lam or Ra, yes?
Yes.
It's not the letter Ya. So whenever you say, for example, Wujuhui, this longer sound, yes. It is Ghunna.
It's Ghunna.
Okay. So, Wujuhun, Yawma'idhin. Now, Ali Nasser, please apply the rule Idgham with Ghunna here.
Wujuhui, Yawma'idhin.
Ahsan.
وجوه يومئذ
Great.
وجوه يومئذ
Everyone?
وجوه يومئذ
Now we have one more tanween. يومئذ
Yes.
Tanween. What is the next letter?
A heavy letter.
خا. خا.
Is it from Yermanun letters?
No.
Which letters?
From the throat letters.
What rule must be applied?
Idhar.
How do you apply it?
Just clearly pronounce.
Clearly pronounce it.
Yawma'idhin.
Khashia. No yarmalun. No merging. No hiding. Nothing. No changing. Look, we have three rules, okay? Merging, hiding, changing. Iqlab, changing. Idgham, merging. Ikhfa, hiding. So, idhar means no changing, no hiding, no merging. No merge, no hide.
No change.
The original sound.
In Arabic, idhar means just like clear. Like
yeah, clearly. Clear. MashaAllah, idhar means clear. Great. So, let's recite this ayah once more.
وجوه يومئذ خاشعة
وجوه يومئذ خاشعة
أحسن Let's go to the next ayahs. So we recite three ayahs, then we'll come back and take a look at the تنوين نون ساكين and the rules, okay?
Okay, so.
عاملة ناصبة
عاملة ناصبة
تصلى نارا حامية
تصلى نارا حامية
تسقى من عين آنية
تسقى من عين آنية
okay. عاملة ناصبة Do we have a tanween?
Yes.
Tun.
Yes.
What is the next letter?
Nun.
Which rule?
إدغام.
إدغام.
With غنّة without غنّة.
With
غنّة.
عاملة ناصبة.
عاملة ناصبة.
Great. ناصبة as well. We have that tanween, okay? But because we stop here, we do not talk about it. While if we connect it to the next ayah, we'll do the إخفارول. But let's not talk about it. Inshallah, in إخفارول study that. Next one. Tasla naran. We have a tanween. What is the next letter?
Ha.
Ha. That alif is because sometimes whenever you stop, that tanween fatha changes to alif maddi. That's why I told you, yes?
Yes.
Tasla nara.
Yes.
Okay? But you should not stop here because hamia is the attribute or the adjective for naran. So together they have to be.
Yes.
Tasla naran. So which rule?
Idhar.
Ha is from the throat letters and idhar. Dar harf halq idhar kun. Whenever you see any of the throat letters, apply the rule.
Idhar.
So, tasla naran hamia.
Tasla naran hamia.
MashaAllah. Tusqa min aynin aniya. So, we have tanween, we have nunasakin. Where is nunasakin? Min. Tusqa min. So, what is the next letter?
Ayn.
Ayn. Which rule?
Idhar.
Ayn is throat letter. Yes. It's clear. Tusqa min aynin. Clearly produce the sound of nun sakin. No change, no merge, no?
Hide.
Okay?
فأتاه الوحي فأشرق اقرأ اقرأ
Let's recite the Quran.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق
تسقى من عين نون تنوين
yes.
right
yes
plus what's the next letter
حمزة
حمزة حمزة حمزة is from
throat letter
throat letter so what rule
Idhar.
Clearly produce the sound of tanween. So let's recite this ayah.
Tusqa min aynin aniya.
Alright? Yes. Okay. Now, if I apply the rule idgham, for example. Tusqa min aynin aniya. So this is wrong, yes?
Yes.
Okay, it doesn't give the meaning, okay?
Yes.
So. تسقى من عين آنية
تسقى من عين آنية
Simple as that. No change, no hide, and no merge. Okay, great. In this ayah, we had two examples for
إظهار.
Next three ayahs.
ليس لهم طعام إلا من ضريع ليس لهم طعام إلا من ضريع
أحسن
لا يسمن ولا يغني من جوع لا يسمن ولا يغني من جوع وجوه يومئذ ناعمة وجوه يومئذ ناعمة
أحسن okay let's take a look at these three ayahs ليس لهم طعام تنوين
yes
so what is the next letter for what
ألف
حمزة right
حمزة
so whenever you see ألف
throat letter
we have حمزة beneath ألف or on the top of ألف that's حمزة okay
ألف حمزة
Hamza. Say Hamzatul Qad. It is Hamzatul Qad. Why? Because we have Hamza. Hamzatul Wasl, we have Alif on the top of Alif, the front of Sad. Okay?
Yes.
So, it's clear. We studied it in level 2, Alhamdulillah. So, Laysa lahum ta'amun, tanween, tanween dhamma, right? Then, plus, the mutaharik letter is Hamza. Hamzatul Qad. So, what rule is applied?
Idhar.
Great. Why?
Because it's a throat
Hamza is a throat letter. So, how do you say this?
طَعَامٌ
إِلَّا Sometimes the reciters produce a sound like this. طَعَامٌ إِلَّا This way they recite. طَعَامٌ إِلَّا Okay?
It's correct.
It's a style of recitation. Okay.
لَيْسَ لَهُمْ طَعَامٌ إِلَّا
Okay?
It's correct.
طَعَامٌ إِلَّا طَعَامٌ إِلَّا Okay. They just smoothly, okay, connected with the next part of the ayah. Okay, great. Ta'amun illa idhar. Next one. Min dhari'a. Nun sakin, right, Fawad? Min dhari'a. What is the next letter? Yarmalun or idhar or throat letters? or ikhlab? Which one? None of them, yes?
Yes.
Not Yarmalun, not Throat Letters, not
because
Ba.
It's the last letter.
It is Dhad, yes?
Yes.
So Dhad is from the rest of the letters that we will apply the rule ikhfa.
The 15
so we will not
letters.
Talk about it. It is actually this way. We have that ghunna here. I told you, yes. In idgham as well, we have ghunna. In ikhfa as well, we have ghunna. Okay? But here we hide. We do not merge.
Mm-hmm.
Look, noon is not merged to da. If we merge it, it becomes
mildari'.
But we do not merge it. Mildari'. The noon sound is still there, but we hide it kind of, yes? We do
we
not
don't
let
say min dari.
Yeah, clearly now.
Not
we do
not serious, and not like we don't hide it like in the
great.
Middle. Min like mir.
We do not merge. We do not clearly pronounce. We do not change it to ba. We hide it rather. Okay, we hide it so we make sure that Sayyid Ali Nasir do not see it. Okay, so next word, mil dari. I will tell you, okay, that mil dari', inshallah, in ikhfa, we have also heavy ikhfa, we have light ikhfa. Okay? Heavy ikhfa is with the letters, with the heavy letters. Look, dod, heavy letter. Mil, heavy sound. Mil dari'. If it is a light letter, mil, for example, the other letters, okay? So, alhamdulillah, this ayah is well finished. La yusminu wa la yughni. Minju again. Jim is there, okay? Afternoon is akin. So we do not talk about it. It's ikhfa, inshallah, the next rule, okay? So let's recite the three ayahs and then we will talk about the rules, okay? And after a break, okay? After a break. So,
Wujuhu yawma'idhin na'imah.
Wujuhu yawma'idhin na'imah.
Thank you so much. Inshallah, in the next session, okay? After taking a break, inshallah, we'll go through the next three ayahs and the rest of the surah, okay? And apply the rules. All right?
Yes.
Do you have any questions?
Yes. No.
No.
Inshallah. After a break, okay, we'll be back. Thank you so much. Let's recite a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad ajil farajah.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Children in Qatar are helping a conservation program revive the population of a critically endangered species of turtles. The children help release the baby turtles after they hatch, which usually takes place during the dark hours of the evening. The hawksbill mothers are cared for, if needed, when they arrive at the beach today, their eggs. When the little turtles emerge, the weaker ones are taken to facilities at the foundation. There, they are cared for until they are strong enough to be returned to sea. Program managers say getting children involved helps raise awareness about the endangered species and how they can help prevent some of the challenges these turtles face.
As adults, we are kind of beyond hope. Our brain is no longer plastic. We can't really learn new things. But children have the power to really internalize all these things that they're learning, that they're seeing. They make these habits part of their life. They make decisions based on, is it good for the environment, alongside with economic value for money kind of decisions. And this is what we want to cultivate.
The children also get a chance to form bonds with the Hawksbill turtles. Some of them have even named the one they are going to release. That's why life experts with the conservation program say only 1% of every 1,000 hatchlings make it to adulthood. Poaching, climate change, fishing nets and marine pollution have all contributed to the dwindling numbers of the species. The program was launched roughly a decade ago and has released 30,000 hatchlings into the sea in the last 5 years. Experts are optimistic about the success of the program. Elephants are the largest living animals on Earth that, in many cultures, are associated with good luck, wisdom and fertility. But their overpopulation has become a matter of concern in the southeastern African nation of Malawi.
We want to reduce the population of elephants in this park, in Luanda National Park, because currently we have 600 plus elephants in this park. We would be comfortable, ecologically speaking, that is, to have 300 elephants in this park.
Officials say they will relocate 250 elephants from a national park in a southern town to another park by the end of July. They say the plan is part of a national conservation initiative to maintain healthy habitats in the country's national parks. Establishing viable elephant populations and ensuring the prosperity of local communities around the parks are said to be the other aspects. Residents say the elephants often stray into their gardens and damage their crops. Authorities had relocated some 300 elephants from the same town in 2019.
A zoo in Mexico City celebrates the birthday of two very special residents, bringing cheers and excitement to visitors. Chinese pandas Xin Xin and Xuan Xuan have turned 35 and 33, becoming the oldest pandas in human captivity. China gifted their ancestors to Mexico back in 1975 to boost the relationships between the two countries. Later on, and thanks to the hard work of caretaker teams, 8 cubs were born from the parents. Zoo officials say for them, learning the A to Z of panda care was a long journey.
The pandas living in Chapultepec, Xuan Xuan and Xin Xin, turned 35 and 33 years old, respectively. When their parents arrived, we didn't know much about pandas, so vets and biologists had to follow recommendations from those who took care of giant pandas in the People's Republic of China. From then on, we evolved. We found new and better diets and daily care practices such as vaccine administration or parasite removal. Then they started to breed, which was quite a success since it was the first panda that was born and which survived named Toy.
The birthday celebration has coincided with the zoo's 99th foundation anniversary. A panda's normal lifespan is estimated at about 15 to 20 years for those out in nature and about 30 years for the ones in human care. But the good news is, despite their old age, Xuan Xuan and Xin Xin are in perfectly good shape. A goat in the Pakistani city of Karachi has made the headlines for its not-so-ordinary looks. The animal owns strikingly long ears. Simba was only born last month and his ears have already reached the length of 54 centimeters. The goat's breeder, Muhammad Hassan Narejo, says he has approached Guinness World Records to see if Simba can be included as the greatest of all time, or the goat, for this peculiar feature. The kid is in the center of attention, so he receives all sorts of help to live a smoother life. This includes a special harness for his ears and daily religious rituals to wish him good health. The breeder says that by promoting Simba's image, he is trying to introduce Pakistan as a major goat breeding nation.
The sky is the limit for wind sports in Iraq's Kurdistan region as members of the paragliding team launched into the sunset. Tourists have also come to watch team members bravely run towards the edge of the cliff of Mount Asmar. They usually take off facing the west to catch the sunset and then glide down towards the grey green meadows. The windy landscape around Iraq's northeastern city of Sulaymaniyah is a hot spot for paragliding. Participants of the sport say it requires a lot of physical strength and mental concentration. Some say their favorite aspect of the activity is the intense silence when flying high above the ground. There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day since the menu largely includes local flavors.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A young British artist has found an incredible way to create art using not pen or paper, but typewriter. Symbols and letters are turned into complex drawings by this 25-year-old's adept fingers, gaining him attention online. London-based James Cork, who studied architecture, used to draw portraits. But that all changed when he discovered his now signature tool, the typewriter, in 2014. He says the idea came to his mind when he came across Paul Smith, an artist from the 1920s, who produced similar work. Initially, Cook thought it impossible, but he gave it a try. Now, after 8 years, he can draw complex images from Hollywood star Tom Hanks to the London Eye or the Millennium Bell. But while his works appear flawless to viewers, Cook says it never gets any easier and that it's always a challenge for him.
There's something really satisfying about kind of using this sort of limited palette of... You basically have about 44 keys on a typewriter on average. So you've got to kind of puzzle piece those letters, numbers, punctuation marks together to make a drawing.
Recently, online interest has encouraged Cook to pursue his passion. People donate their typewriters to Cook, who gives these machines a second life. He now has a collection of more than 40 typewriters dating from the early 20s.
Colombia's long hunt for a fabled Spanish ship, San Jose Galleon, that sank centuries ago, comes to an end. But the mission leads to two more nearby shipwrecks filled with treasures.
We have found two additional ships, one ship that is from the colonial period and another that, from the point of view of preliminary analysis, corresponds to the Republican period of our history. We also have related vessels, around a dozen similar boats, that will be located by our Navy.
The colonial era vessels were found near Colombia's Caribbean port of Cartagena. A remotely operated vehicle reached 900 meters beneath to capture the shipwrecks and treasures inside them. San Jose galleon sank in a deadly battle against English warships in 1708, taking with it billions in treasure. The Colombian president says the findings will be preserved and protected until extraction is done completely. The riches will then be displayed in museums.
Colombian scientists managed to reproduce an endangered species of frog, bringing it back from the brink of extinction. The scientists were able to reproduce 29 specimens of Lehman's poison frog after years of investigations and experiments using a lab built specifically for this species. They have released the frogs into the Colombian Pacific region with the hope of starting its repopulation.
We observe how the frogs adapt to this ecosystem, which is theirs, but it is a constant monitoring. And the idea is that of these first 29 frogs at the moment, there will be many more little frogs, and now we can tell the world that they are not in danger of extinction.
The scientists, however, warned that this particular species of frog is very difficult to reproduce or maintain under human care. They are also worried about the illegal trade of the frogs, which has already played a key role in pushing the rare species towards extinction. Colombia is home to over 700 frog species, more than any other country in the world except Brazil. In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Ortman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.